Juliet Dogcast Radio. If you like dogs, wherever you are in the world, we're the show for you.
Hello, and welcome to episode 290 of Dogcast Radio, which is a celebration of our 20th anniversary of podcasting, our 20th podiversary. Here's how it all started.
Hello, and welcome to episode 1 of Dogcast Radio. Coming up in this programme, which dog breed inspired these comments?
They're all some nice, friendly, calm dogs. That is until you get one.
But very biddable, very easy, very comfortable.
And I love them.
I'd have a house full if I could. I really would.
That breed, of course, was the Labrador. We went to a Labrador Fun Day organised by Labrador Forums, and it was magnificent and the perfect friendly place to start the podcast. Our dog Buddy was a Labrador, and he was the dog that inspired the podcast. Well, really, it was Buddy, coupled with Mr. Dogcast's insight that podcasting was about to take off, and his ability and knowledge to handle the technical side, because I'm just the talker. He's the techie. He's the brains. Once we had Buddy, I kept falling into conversation with other dog owners, and I'd always been looking for an outlet for my writing. And without an adult in the house to tell us not to do it, we went ahead and created Dogcast Radio. So off we went to the Labrador Fun Day, where everyone was happy to be interviewed or photographed, and it made a great first episode. And of course, right from that first episode, we had training advice.
No matter how much training you do, whether a dog knows to sit, stay, down, whatever, even if it's a great dog, come when called would be the most important command.
That first one was from Joe Timko from Canyon View Ranch. Add in Jenny with news of a competition and my review of a website we enjoyed, and bam, we were podcasting, baby. We carried on that mix of going out and meeting and interviewing people and phoning people and interviewing them, and it enabled us to meet some amazing people. I remember in episode 3, we went to interview a club who were doing water training with Newfoundlands. And Newfoundlands really are astounding in the water. And by the way, if I am ever shipwrecked and struggling in the water, I want to see a furry powerhouse splashing over to save me. It was fascinating watching them.
We're trying the Newfoundlands in water rescue, which is basically we're trying them to come out to the boat, pull the boat back in. Another element at a different level is they'll jump out of the boat and then pick the rope up and pull it back. They will rescue people from the water, objects from the water. Your dog has to be able to swim safely alongside with you.
Isn't it funny how some things feel burned into your brain? But all those years ago, at that water training, we were taking photos and videos too, and someone made sarcastic comments. That'll go well on the radio. Photos and videos were content we needed to support the audio. The thing is, 20 years ago, not many people knew what a podcast was, which was why we put radio in the title and included the phrase internet radio for dog lovers whenever we posted anything. Times were changing, but let's not get ahead of ourselves, because way back in those dim and distant early days of podcasting, the technology involved was challenging. It was challenging for me, anyway. Now, I mainly use Zoom to do interviews. And of course, that's just pressing a couple of buttons and off we go. But back in 2005, our dining table was just covered with wires and umpteen little boxes, and I had to turn this switch to that setting and make sure this little gadget had the correct setting selected. And then I had to make sure the whole thing was recording, but we'll come back to that, because I've glossed right over episode 2, which featured a kickboxing black Russian terrier.
It just seemed as it's playing, or if it like wants to come in the house or something, if it thinks the door, like a normal dog will push through the door, but this one was jumping up on the back legs and hitting the door with his front feet, and it seemed powerful. So I was thinking that, you know, if I could get him to do that to command, so that's all I've been trying to do, is it seemed to be a natural thing with the black Russian terrier to use the front legs. But, like I say, with me kickboxing training and that, you know, I'm used to teaching young children that have got no confidence and everything like that. So it's just the same sort of way, and you reward them when they get a bit stronger in that, and that's how it come about.
There was one occasion when I did the interview. It went really well. The interviewee gave me great information, and I was really pleased right up until the moment I played it back. And there was a lot of me going, mm-hmm, yeah, mm, really? And complete silence on the other side, because I had somehow not flipped the switch to record both sides of the conversation. Thank goodness it's so much easier now. It was, of course, much easier to record things at home, like our original fiction.
And now, 2-minute fiction. The Christmas present. It was 2 days before Christmas, and almost time to go home for the evening. But when you're a vet, you get used to the fact that from time to time, people barge into your surgery demanding emergency treatment for their pet, and it won't always be at a convenient time. These cases are always the saddest. Often road accidents, and it's always touch and go whether the animal survives. This time was no different. She swept in with her dog, only this time it was walking at her heels, not clutched, bleeding in her arms, and he was as agitated as his mistress. "I want to see the vet now," she announced.
And one of the longest-running fiction features we've had is Buddy's Diary, Tales of Life from a Labrador's Perspective.
Buddy's Diary.
Hello, Buddy the Black Labrador here. You know, sometimes I think I don't understand some of my fellow dogs any better than I do humans. Don't get me wrong, there are lots of things about my humans I completely understand. They like a cuddle, they don't like my wet nose being pushed under their bedclothes, and if I sit very quietly and don't touch them, they might give me the last bit of their food. See, I know lots about them. But some things I just don't get. Socks, for instance. A huge amount of energy is wasted in our house on socks.
And if you'd like to hear more of Buddy's thoughts about socks, that clip was from episode 40. Dogcast Radio was a family affair from the start, and as Jenny was a child at the time, we had puppy playtime for younger listeners, hosted by Jenny.
And now, for our younger listeners, it's puppy playtime.
You can make training your dog fun by teaching him some tricks. An easy trick to teach is shake hands.
Do you know, even back then, dog theft was an issue.
Hi, my name's Jane and I have a website called dogloss.co.uk. Now, this is actually set up after my own dog went missing. I spent a frantic 6.5 weeks searching for her, putting posters up, and then I realised the system, well, there is no system actually for lost and found dogs. I was going from one dog warden to another who aren't in touch with each other, to kennels who aren't in touch with each other. In the end, luckily I had a tip-off where my dog was, and I realised she wasn't missing. She'd actually been stolen and sold on in a local pub for drug money. In the end, my partner and I were put in a position we had to snatch her back. Because we'd logged her as missing, we didn't have a crime number, so it's not a criminal offence. So we had to snatch her back in the middle of the street. Then the police came out and wanted to arrest us. And the whole palaver just made us think, right, there's got to be a national lost and found site for dogs.
Dogloss.co.uk has grown enormously since then. And there are thankfully many people who will get out and help or even track down your dog with their detection dog or a drone. And while dogs going missing is sometimes unavoidable, it does seem shocking to me that dog theft is still such an issue, because it was back in episode 37 in 2007 that I talked to Debbie Matthews.
Well, it was just one of those days I just decided to go out to Camberley, near where my father lived, and I was going to do a bit of shopping, get some cakes, and then pop in to see him. And on my way, I went into Windsor Great Park, had a walk with the dogs, and as I would normally do, it's a huge, big car park there. It's just such a busy place. There's security men walking around, car washers there. Went in, did my shopping, came back. I could see the car from the store. It's not like it's miles away from where the store is. And when I was walking back towards the car, I could see two men standing by my car, and I thought, well, that's a strange place to say. They'd be driving the dogs mad. And as I could get closer, I could see that the driver's window wasn't reflecting.
Oh, dear.
And I shouted at them. I could see one of them was a security man then, and I just shouted over to him, "Are my dogs okay?" And they both turned around, looked in the car, and of course they said, "What dogs?"
Oh, dear.
Debbie's story had a happy ending, not least because Debbie's father, who she mentioned there, was Sir Bruce Forsyth, and after father and daughter appealed in the media and on GMTV for the return of their beloved Yorkshire Terriers Gizmo and Widget, amazingly, Debbie's dogs did come safely home. But actually, that wasn't the end at all, because through losing her dogs, Debbie had come into contact with lots of people who weren't as lucky as her, who didn't get their dogs back, and sometimes carried on searching for years and never knew what happened to their four-legged family members. In 2016, it became mandatory in the UK to microchip your dog. Aha! We all cheered. Here's an end to dog theft. That magic microchip will get lost and stolen dogs back home. But when I interviewed Debbie again, that wasn't the case.
Lots of dogs disappear and you never see them again. Mm. I got my dogs back. Family people who loved those dogs bought them and they would have gone to the vets. And that's why vets are the crucial link in what I wanted to do. And my husband said to me, if you could change anything, what would it be? And I said, well, it would be that vets would scan pets when they first registered at their practices. That was 14 years ago.
Yes. Yeah.
And today I'm still trying.
Now it's 2025 and we're still trying. Look, it's a difficult area. I know it's nuanced and it's complicated, but here's the thing. Dogs and other animals are suffering. Dogs are staying lost or stolen. Sadly, pets are also sometimes dying, and their owners never know where they are, and they never get closure. I'm really sorry to strike such a sad, sour note in this show, but for crying out loud, surely there's an answer to this. There has to be. Otherwise, selling me the microchip as the salvation of lost and stolen dogs and compelling me to microchip my dogs and cats, well, it starts to look more like a money-gathering exercise than a real attempt to reunite missing pets with their owners, doesn't it? However, I strive to keep Dogcast Radio upbeat, and we've had a lot of fun with it.
Now, as we've been making Dogcast, sometimes we've just got silly.
Dog, dog,
dog, dog,
dog, dog,
dog, dog,
dog, dog,
dog, dog,
dog,
dog,
dog,
dog.
6 months into podcasting life, we went to Crufts. It was my first trip to Crufts, and it was such a confidence boost that Crufts, the Kennel Club, considered us press. We were classed as new media. I know that the dog showing world in the UK is far from perfect, but there was such a magic to so many dogs, and dog products and information and charities, and then, though of course not now, the big BBC dome, or whatever you call the structure, which used to project into Hall 1 of the NEC. I found it all intoxicating. Up until then, I felt a fraud and a bit silly approaching people with a microphone, but the lanyard the press office gave me seemed to be imbued with magical qualities. Because I had a newfound confidence approaching potential interviewees brandishing my microphone, because if anyone said, "You've got no rights to be here," I could show my lanyard and say, "Well, the Kennel Club thinks otherwise." Mentioning the microphone, it's worth saying that in those early days, we recorded on mini discs, and we were so obsessive about not losing any interviews we recorded that we tended to keep the little discs and just keep buying new ones rather than re-recording over what we'd already done. That first Crufts made such an impression on me that a vague dream or impulse grew that I wanted to show Buddy Crufts. Don't misunderstand, I didn't want to show Buddy at Crufts. I wanted to show Crufts to him. I think initially I wanted him to see how important dogs are to people, how much he meant to me, and I thought he would enjoy being among all those people and dogs. I thought about it for a long time, and I talked it over with Mr. Dogcast and Jenny, and the idea of Crufts or Bust was born. I was aware it was a long shot, because dogs have to earn their place at Crufts. You can't just take any dog to Crufts. They have to be approved to go. Could I ever actually really bring my beloved Buddy to the biggest dog show in the world? We'll find out later. Meanwhile, people were listening to Dogcast Radio and wanting to be involved. And one delightful listener, Sarah from Wyoming, got in touch to tell us she'd taught her Bichon Frise, Willie, to sneeze on command.
OK, well, it started out when I taught him how to speak on command. He's a naturally vocal dog, so, you know, when I'm training my dog, I use whatever techniques or whatever skills come to him naturally. So he likes to bark a lot, and so I taught him how to bark on command, and eventually that drove my dad nuts, so I started looking around for something else to teach him, and I noticed that my dog sneezes when he's happy. So I taught him to sneeze on command by saying hachoo every time he sneezed, and he picked it up very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's his favorite trick of all, so when he wants to communicate with us, he'll go hachoo, hachoo. He's a real character to have around the house now.
That's in episode 8, and if you've never heard a dog sneeze on command, here you go.
Hachoo! 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 Good boy.
Isn't that amazing? And all simply pairing a word with a naturally occurring behaviour and rewarding it. We've been championing kind reward-based methods since 2005. Talking of Bichon Frise leads me to talk of Star, Jenny's dog. She was the dog who taught me that small dogs have every bit as much brain and bravery as larger ones, and sometimes way more. When we first had Star, she was tiny, about the size of a guinea pig, and I remember thinking, how can I teach this tiny dog even to know where the water bowl is? Of course, she showed me that she could remember that and so much more. And in fact, both Buddy and Star passed their bronze, silver and gold Kennel Club Good Citizen Awards. And I have such happy memories of attending classes with Jenny and Star and Buddy and us all experiencing the joy of being a team together, communicating and communing. Now, while Star taught me that size isn't everything, we were delighted to interview Sandy Hall, the owner of the then world's tallest living dog, Gibson the Great Dane.
Well, for anyone that doesn't know, can you tell us Gibson's claim to fame?
Claim to fame?
Mm-hmm.
You know, right off the top of my head, world's tallest dog.
Yep.
Guinness and World Records. And right real close to that, he loves everybody unconditionally. All of the time, no matter what.
And just
and that includes all animals, all people, every, you know.
Yeah. They're a lovely
more love in his heart than everybody I know all put together.
Mm. They're a lovely breed, aren't they?
And if by any chance you think dogs don't love, here's the proof.
You want to hear Gibson say, I love you? Come here, Gibson. I love you.
The interview is in episode 18, and Sandy was a joy to talk to, and her love of her dogs really shines through. Another record breaker now.
Well, he's the oldest dog in the world, officially, yes. He's been crowned the oldest dog in the world, and he's a little angel.
Yeah.
Bless him.
And how old is he?
He will be 21 on the 14th of February.
The world's oldest living dog at the time, Otto. We met him and his owners, Lynn and Peter Jones, at Dogs Trust, and Lynn told me that he still enjoyed a good play with his toys and even the odd short walk. So what did she put his longevity down to?
All I could put it down to is plenty of love and affection, plenty of good food, because he loves his vegetables, he loves his Sunday dinners, and he's quite a contented dog and he's quite happy.
Yeah.
Talking about dogs ageing, Dr. Stanley Corrin had some excellent practical advice in episode 15. He advocated using hand signals, which aids communication with your dog, giving them verbal and visual channels of communication. But there's more.
At the same time, it has a long-term effect, which is quite good, and we call this age-proofing. We know, for example, that lots of retrievers tend to lose their hearing as they grow older, that lots of terriers tend to get the dimmed sight and that sort of thing. So if your dog, for example, loses his hearing, he still has the visual channel of information for you to communicate with him and vice versa.
And even more than that, he told me that one of the most important signals to teach is good dog. Because without that, if your dog loses hearing, you might never be able to tell them they're a good dog. How profound and moving is that? Although Buddy, my Labrador, was only 3 at the time of that interview, we immediately used signs for every verbal word we taught him, and we used a thumbs up for good boy. He lived to be 15 and a half and lost virtually all of his hearing, but we could always communicate, and I could always tell him he was a good boy, because he always was.
Properly trained, a man can be a dog's best friend. Corey Ford.
Graham Sims has been on the podcast several times. He's an amazing man, and I've enjoyed interviewing him every single time. His story is amazing. He was in advertising, and then he was out of advertising, and at a very low point in his life, Border Collie Annie turned up, and he became a shepherd, and he became a vicar. He really is fascinating. And he did displays with his team of Border Collies, not just working 8 dogs simultaneously, but giving instructions to each dog in a different language. You can hear Graham in episodes 29, 62, 84 and 174, and he is well worth listening to. Graham gave me the best dog advice ever.
I guess there's an attitude in the first place. One of my granddaughters wishing to score points said to me, "What's the secret of dog training, Grandad?" And I said, "There isn't a secret," but I thought about what she said. And there is a secret. It's love them so much that they can't resist you. That's the secret.
Loving your dog translates into various actions. However we do it, love makes us try to meet our dog's needs. And I would say one of those needs is for a comfortable, safe, warm place to sleep, preferably indoors. So when I saw the 2010 John Lewis advert, where there was a traditional kennel, you know the kind, sort of small, squarish, with a pointed sloping roof and an elongated semicircular entrance with no door, in which the dog was living despite bleak, windy, snowy weather, it made me very uneasy. I wanted to do something, but I didn't know what. That same evening of seeing the advert, I set up a Facebook page called Stop the John Lewis Christmas Advert. I let a few friends know, and I went to bed. I thought we'd all just have a bit of a moan about the ad and feel a bit better. But when I woke up, the page had 1,500 members all up in arms about the advert, and the media, newspapers and radio initially, were showing interest. It turned into a mad, hectic, emotional few days. So many phone calls and interviews, which was great, because I was helping promote dog welfare, but not all the reaction was positive. And at this point, I have to say a huge thank you to Beverly Cuddy, the editor of Dogs Today, to whom I turned in despair, and she helped me through that difficult time. Lots of people, including the owner of the dog featured in the advert, protested that the dog was well looked after during the shoot, but that wasn't my concern. I was worried about what the advert portrayed and promoted as acceptable dog ownership. The good news is that we did win. We, all of us together, I mean, put enough pressure on John Lewis that they edited the advert down and showed it without the dog in it. Not everyone shared our concerns. Some responses inquired whether I would be pursuing the optician's advert at the time, where the farmer sheared his dog, mistaking it for a sheep. But, all joking aside, I would assume that anyone with access to a herd of sheep, a sheepdog and shearing equipment would be responsible enough to actually have had an eye test, and that advert is clearly comical. My worry was that anyone can get a dog, and anyone can get caught up in the, "Oh, isn't it a lovely aesthetic?" to adorn a dog kennel with fairy lights, as portrayed in the advert, and watch their dog looking festive in the snow, in the kennel, with the fairy lights, from the warmth of their own house. And some people might have been persuaded to pop their dog in an outside kennel, particularly over Christmas, with lots of guests coming and going and lots of meals at which the dog can be a pain and beg for food. After all, dogs have fur, don't they? They didn't freeze to death in the wild or when we lived in caves. But dogs have come a long way since those primitive days. I suppose the real question is, how far have humans come? To lighten the mood, one of the best zingers I received during that whole furore was, "Who's next, Julie Hill? Snoopy?" You know, now I come to think of it, Snoopy does need my help. I'll go and start a Facebook page. Bring Snoopy indoors. I'm just joking. But talking of fictional dogs, let's turn to Greyfriars Bobby. Well, Bobby was a real dog, but he has become a legend. Around 1850, John Grey moved to Edinburgh and took a job as a night watchman. His job involved patrolling the streets, and he acquired a watchdog, Bobby. The two were inseparable, even eating together at a local coffee house when John finished his shift. John became ill with tuberculosis, and in 1858 he died. He was buried in Greyfriars Churchyard, and a heartbroken Bobby refused to leave his master's grave. The churchyard was a no-dogs area, and the keeper of the churchyard tried in vain to enforce this rule. But Bobby was not to be put off. There is dispute over what breed Bobby actually was, and you can find references to him as a Cairn and Scottish Terrier. His statue is most like a Skye Terrier, and this is generally what he is agreed to be. Whatever breed Bobby was, he faithfully kept his vigil for an amazing 14 years, until his own death in 1872. The lovely thing about Bobby's story is that when he was living alone, he was fed by local workers, and when he needed a licence, the Lord Provost of Edinburgh bought the licence and a collar for him. His devotion touched many hearts and continues to move us today, as many of us make the pilgrimage to see his statue outside the bar named after him, and so many people rub his nose, the colour has been rubbed away. You can hear Bobby's story in episode 10, and we also have photos on dogcastradio.com of our trip to his statue to pay our respects. Other mythical dogs we have featured include Gellert, whose sad story you can hear in episode 19, along with the story of some more modern inspiring dogs.
Well, as recently as 1953, a humble sheepdog, Tip, showed her undying attachment to her shepherd master. Joseph Tagg and his dog Tip were out on Howden Moors in December 1953 when a blizzard descended. It was not until 15 weeks later, in March 1954, that Joseph's body was discovered, and at his side was his dog, Tip, starving but resolute in her devotion. Tip was given a home for the remaining 2 years of her life, and after her death in 1955, public money paid for a memorial stone to be erected commemorating her faithfulness, and this can be found beside Derwent Reservoir in the UK.
Back to real-life dogs now, because Buddy and I were working hard on our plans to get to Crufts. It was such a long shot and seemed so unlikely, yet it had taken such hold of me that I promised Mr. Dogcast that I would just take 1 year to try to bring my Crufts dreams to fruition, and if it didn't happen, I'd move on. So now I had a tagline. One dog, 1 year, one crazy idea, Crufts or bust. Yes, I would give it my all for 1 year, and Buddy, bless him, gave it his all as well. We tried to access Crufts via the show ring, agility, obedience, Blue Cross, heel work to music. We were a great team. In fact, looking back, I can't believe I had the blind faith or the energy to do it all, because we also passed all three levels of the Kennel Club Good Citizen Scheme, bronze, silver and gold, got Buddy assessed and accredited as an educational visiting dog, and joined the Kennel Club Safe and Sound team. It was full on, and earned Buddy the nickname of the Dog of Requirement, because, like the room in that wizarding school, whatever I needed of him, Buddy rose to the occasion and offered me. We had so many adventures, successes, failures, lessons, tears and laughter along the way, and I'll share with you now what I learned. This is what I wrote at the end of that year. During my research, I came across this doubtful advice for breeders that they should, quote, love the dream more than the dog, end quote. Buddy and I had come a long way together. We had learned an immense amount, and we had indeed made the precious memories I sought. I dreamed a dream of taking Buddy to Crufts, and we succeeded. But better than that, I gained the enduring knowledge that I love my dog more than I loved the dream.
What did the police dog say to the Queen? Woof woof, he's a dog. What do you expect?
That was the joke from the end of our first podcast, and it was one of the things I knew I wanted to include from the start. I love shows that include a little post-titles scene or joke or something. I think it comes from childhood, you know, when your show finishes and it's bedtime, come on. But you can say, hang on, I have to watch the bit at the end. And so we've always included a joke right at the end of the podcast. And talking about what we've included, we've always featured sound, reliable training advice. This is Jennifer Billett from episode 282 giving us great advice if we think we haven't got time to devote to training or going to a class.
I sort of advise my clients a few different things. It depends on the client. It depends on the person's personality. So for some of them, I say find the moments throughout the days where you're waiting around. And that's usually waiting for coffee to be made, or you've put something in the microwave, or delivery was coming and it's, you know, how you can see the little man and it's 5 minutes away. You know, those would be your ideal moments, because we don't need to be training our dogs for hours at a time. I think people think that we, you know, you need to set aside big chunks of time. But in reality, for sort of everyday training, fitting in a few minutes multiple times a day is very beneficial and more achievable for the majority of dog owners.
Hashtag dog life hacks. There's lots of training advice on the Dogcast Radio site. It was so difficult to choose one person, but I opted for that because it's something we can all do and make the most of otherwise wasted time. I think we've covered every life stage of a dog. We've had advice for puppy owners. Here's the wonderful Carolyn Menteith in episode 167.
Things look really, really different to a dog. I went and saw a 12-week-old puppy not that long ago, and they were having huge problems because the puppy had never walked on a slippery floor or on grass. The breeder had actually reared the puppy quite nicely, but all the time they'd just been on carpet. They'd never been on any other surface, and this puppy was fairly convinced that he could not walk on grass and he couldn't walk on any other surface because he'd never had that experience, and suddenly this was just a real worry for this puppy. We're not very good at thinking like a dog.
We've covered how to introduce a second dog with advice from Lynn Richards in episode 13.
We had this email, Lynn, from some people that had a 9-month-old yellow Labrador already, and they were getting a puppy, and their trainer had said to them, separate them until the new puppy is 16 weeks old, so he gets out of his...
No.
Yeah, I know. This rang bells with me immediately.
Yeah.
And so what is the right way to introduce a new puppy to your existing dog?
Okay, well, normally to introduce a new dog to an existing household, I take them both to a neutral place where nobody owns anything.
Mm.
So like a park or, some place that is someplace where they could play on a loose lead and get to know each other, and you can keep the puppy safe.
Mm.
But you can also meet, you know, the new dog, the old dog can meet the new dog and not feel threatened because it's on his territory.
Yeah.
And then when you return to the house, you return everybody all together.
We've explored life with an older dog with Karen Litzinger.
Okay, let's talk about some of the issues, because, as you say, there are some reasons that you would sort of maybe hang back from adopting an older dog. But, you know, let's talk about them and see what the facts are about them. Because, I mean, one of the worries people might have is, you know, don't older dogs cost more in vet bills?
Right. And actually, I was... looking online, this is a little bit of a gray area in that it depends on what age you're talking about. You know, puppies, actually, this was from a petplace.com resource. It showed they're almost twice as expensive, especially the first year, as dogs. And now sort of average, you know, age dogs. Now, there's probably an issue when I read further, like, when you get about at the age 8, they might start to have a little more medical cost.
You can hear more of that interesting and inspiring interview in episode 115. We've talked a lot about bereavement because, let's face it, your dog's death is emotionally brutal. But we're not alone in our grief. There is help, and there are practical steps we can take to help ourselves. In episode 173, Wendy Vanderpoel gave her advice. She's an end-of-life and pet loss grief coach and has written several books to help people.
My titles are, you know, My Dog is Dying, What Do I Do?
Yeah.
My Dog Has Died, What Do I Do? This is what clients say to me when I get the phone call or I get the email, and they say, my dog is dying. What am I going to do?
Yeah.
So there are, you know, there's ways to prepare. I'm a big one with my clients is, when you get that news, when your pet is dying, they have a terminal illness, yes, you're going to feel grief. And I help them in my books and in my coaching programs to feel that grief, but also start building a plan. No matter if you have a week, you have a month, you have 2 hours, try to get some type of plan together so that you know what's expected of yourself. Like, I get up in the morning, I cook my breakfast, I feed Ralphie, I go for a walk. You know, having those all those things written down, really, it sounds ridiculous, but it really does help.
Control
or manage, or to take grief by the hand rather than let grief push you around.
Yes. We're big fans of science here at Dogcast Radio, and I've very much enjoyed interviewing Gregory Burns about his book, What It's Like to Be a Dog, and his research looking into dogs' brains in an MRI.
In this experiment, we call it food versus praise. So it's essentially the same experiment, except we added a condition that on some of the trials, the dog was signaled that they would get a hot dog, and then on other trials, they were signaled that if they wait, then their owner would pop into view and just praise them and say, good girl, just like something like that. So it's a head-to-head comparison, really, of the value of food versus the value of a social reward, just the simple act of praising. And again, we focused on the same part of the brain that's central to the reward system, and then we use that as a kind of meter or gauge of what the dog likes. And so we could calculate for each dog the relative value of food and praise. And what we found, based on the brain activity, is the majority of dogs had approximately equal responses to food and praise.
I'd like to say two things about that. One is that Greg trained the dogs to access the MRI in such a way that they could choose at any point to leave it. They were treated the same as volunteers, and they weren't forced to be in or stay in the MRI. And there you go, more proof and scientific proof, our dogs love us. And now for something completely different. Cow pugs. You heard me. I saw a video of pugs rounding up cattle, and I knew I had to speak to them. Well, to their humans, anyway. So, within 24 hours of seeing those amazing pugs, I was asking Sarah Jean Waddell to tell me all about her cow pugs.
Well, Paisley and Tuff, Paisley is 3 years old, and we got her when my husband and I lived in Montana. So when we got Paisley, and we got a job at a ranch in eastern Oregon in the U.S., I felt really bad leaving her inside all the time while we're out pushing cows and working, you know, 10-plus hours a day, and she's inside by herself all the time. So I asked my husband, and I was like, you know, I think I'm going to start bringing Paisley out to help us push cows. And he's like, well, what if she gets in the way? What if she gets tired? And I'm like, you know, I'll be there to watch her. And, you know, if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. We'll leave her inside. But, you know, it's at least worth a try. And so we took her out, and we noticed pretty quickly that she started kind of mimicking the border collies when they were pushing cattle.
Yeah.
She was going and following them. If a cow was kind of breaking out away from the herd, she'd follow them to bring them back into the herd. Or if their one was dragging really hard in the back, she'd get up right behind it and push it forward up into the herd. And so I was like, that's really interesting. That's pretty hilarious that she's doing this. So yeah. I thought, just for kind of kicks and giggles, that, well, maybe, you know, I'll start teaching her the basic commands of a cattle dog. And she started picking up on it right away. And she actually got really, really into it. So we started taking her out on a regular basis, and she actually works better than some of our cattle dogs.
Wow.
Yep. Cattle pugs. It's episode 225 and is well worth a listen. We've talked to so many people with amazing assistance dogs. I couldn't single one of them out, but I have such admiration for assistance dogs and the way they're trained and the way they change lives. They're amazing. Maybe I'll do a special on the assistance dogs we've featured, because goodness knows they deserve it. We've also talked to dogs or dog owners about the dogs dealing with their own disability, like Stevie, the blind Bernese Mountain Dog, who with owner Jill reached a high level of training.
Stevie was a rescue at 10 weeks old. I got an email saying that there was a Bernese Mountain Dog puppy that needed a home right away, and he was totally blind. You know, he really doesn't have, there's not all that much different about him.
I'm very fortunate in that one of my other dogs, who's also a rescue, knew right off that there was something different about Stevie and took it upon himself to be Stevie's guide in the backyard and would, you know, get in between Stevie and a tree or Stevie and a fence and make sure that he didn't bump into anything. The Companion Dog Sports Program is a combination. It's through the St. Hubert's Giralda Shelter in New Jersey, and they started their own registry. It's kind of the best of both worlds. What they do with Stevie is I'm allowed to talk to him more than you would be able to talk to a sighted dog because Stevie heals to the sound of my voice. The recall exercise for the companion dog title is over a jump like it is in UKC. And so they let me take a pointing stick and tap the jump so that he can hear it. A dog that was sighted that was his height would have a much higher jump height, but they allow him to jump 4 inches because, you know, they understand that jumping his normal, I think it would be 18 or 20 inches would be prohibitive for a blind dog. So they let him jump 4 inches and they let me tap the jump, and he's very smart. He learned very quickly to come up and sniff the jump and see where it was and then put himself over it. He's very bright with that.
There's so much more that we've covered over the years, which I'd love to revisit with you. But we could be here for weeks, so I think what I'll do is bring things to a close now, and I'll maybe put another show together looking back at all the other things I couldn't fit into this show about what we've got up to over the years. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing with me the joy of dogs. Thank you for sending me photos and videos of your dogs. Thank you for all the support. Thank you even to the people who sent snarky comments or disagreed or made life really difficult at times, because I think, I'd like to think, it came from the same place, the place of loving dogs. And I would like to go on sharing that love with you for as long as I can. But 20 years of being here with you, sharing dogs with you, sharing Dogcast Radio with you, it's been an amazing experience. And I've thoroughly enjoyed talking to so many wonderful people and meeting so many wonderful dogs. And I don't want to blow my own trumpet, but we've never been afraid to tackle gritty, real-life issues through our fiction.
My owner loves me, and I like her. All right, I love her too, but she's driving me mad. The thing is, and I'm embarrassed even to tell you this, she makes me wear clothes.
Dogs in clothes, a hot topic. Well, it can make dogs hot anyway. Until next time, look after yourselves and your dogs. Thanks for listening to Dogcast Radio, available from www.dogcastradio.com. That's dogcastradio.com. If you'd like to get in touch with us, and wherever you are in the world, we'd love to hear from you. You can do so in a variety of ways. You can contact us on Skype with the ident Dogcast Radio. That's all one word, Dogcast Radio. By email, you can contact me on julie@dogcastradio.com. When contacting us by email, if you have the facilities, please record your questions or comments and send them to us as an audio file. That way we can include them directly in our programme. We can accept most formats, for example, WAV, MP3. All these methods of contacting us can be found on our website, which is www.dogcastradio.com. Who is the most famous doggy magician in history? Houdini.